besides being a member of Hammeroid, and on the week before, there was a banjo player here named Margot Baum who was really interested in modal tunes, so I was just digging up every single modal tune I could possibly think of. I laid one of my favorites on her from a banjo player who died about 6 years ago, lived down in Hillsville, Virginia, named Sidna Myers. And it was called The Twin Sisters. And it's always been one of my favorite tunes, so I was whistling it to myself on the way up to the wedding, thinking about how nice it was that they were getting married and love songs and things like that. And so I wrote a little song inspired by Sid Meier's, Margot Baum, and Malcolm Douglas and Judy Klein. And I think the first time I ever performed it was at a concert at Augusta last year, and this is the second time I've ever performed it. If I were a feather bed all in your house, if I could hold you in my arms each night and keep you warm in the wintertime. And if I were an old banjo, felt your fingers on the strings, sing the sweetest little song that a banjo ever did sing. If I were a drop of rain that trickled down your chin, I'd climb right up and I'd kiss your lips, I'd kiss them twice again. And if I were a breath of wind on your cheek as you walked by, I'd pick you up upon my back and I'd teach you how to fly. If I were a big wool rug just a sitting in your front hall, tickle your feet and make you laugh, you stepped on me at all. And if I were a hair ribbon and my collar it was blue, I'd be 10 times as beautiful, 'cause I'd be wearing you. If I were a feather bed, all in your house if I hold you in my arms each night and keep you warm in the wintertime. Well, I'll tell you what, we've been sitting for a while. I'm going to tell you, I'd like to tell you a quick little story and then have one more song. Well, now this is a true story. I don't usually tell stories unless they're true. You see, this involves a couple of brothers who live down the road from me. And I guess I should start back when their mother and their father met. You see, the father's name was Jack, and the mother's name was Eliza. Well, Eliza just thought Jack was the best name she'd ever heard of in the whole world, and Jack thought Eliza was the best name he'd ever heard of, and that's partially why they got married, because they found somebody else they could get along with that had the names they liked. And they got to living with one another so long that they just plumb forgot that there were any other names. So when their first son got born, as first sons do, they called him Jack. Well, a little while later, they found out they were going to have another child. And they read up all about it, and they said, well, I guess this one will be a girl, and we'll call this one Eliza. But lo and behold, on the day it was born, it was another boy. And all along, they just thought about naming it Eliza, and so they didn't know what they were going to do, so they just named it Jack, because that was the only man's name they thought there was. So there were three Jacks in this family. There was Little Jack, and there was Big Jack, and there was Big Daddy Jack. Well, eventually they thought one of the Jacks had to leave the house because it was just too confusing when they got mail or when they got a telephone call or something like that. They just couldn't figure out who they wanted to talk to or whose letter it was. So the Big Jack, first son, says, well, I'm about 13 or 14 years old now. I'm about ready to go out and get married. I guess I ought to get me a job. So I'll leave and go off and work over in Randolph County for the summer. And so he was reading through the Intermountain one day, and he saw in the classified ads that the king down in Greenbrier County needed him a farmhand. So he walked over the mountain down to Greenbrier County, and he knocked on the microphone, and the king answered the door. And Big Jack says, now look at here, king. I've been reading your little program here in the Intermountain, and I understand you need your farmhand. And he says, well, yes, I do. And he named off all the things he had to do. He said he had to slop the hogs and wash the car and pick apples and plow new ground and tend the sheep and everything. I says, can you do all that? And he says, you're gall darn right tootin' I can do that. And he says, now me and my boys, we have a little contract out here. And it says right in the fine print here, the contract, that first one of us flies mad, the other one gets to cut three licks of skin right out of the quick of his back. And he says, now, king, why is that in there? He says, well, because I've had a lot of trouble with the boys who work for me, and they're always fussing at me, and I'm always fussing at them. So we just decided we'd put a lid in the contract, so we just get along. You get me? And he says, yeah, where do I sign? So he signed up, went to bed that night, got up early the next morning. He says, king, I'm about to starve. Fix me up a dog sandwich or something like that. And he says, now, Jack, you don't expect me to pay a man who hasn't done me any work. You go out and tend my sheep today, and we'll talk about dinner when you get back home tonight. So Jack's, you know, had sort of a warped sense of justice, so he thought that was all right. He went out and tended a sheep. The king counted up the sheep, made sure how many there was. Came in that night, king counted up all the sheep again, all of them were. And he said, Jack, you've done a good job. Jack says, king, how about some supper? And he says, well, king, and Jack, you know, while you were out there, I was reading in my Adele Davis book that it's just not good for you to eat before you go to bed. You've got to eat right to keep fit. So you just go to bed, and we'll talk about it in the morning. Well, this went on for about a week. He'd been going out working every day, doing one thing and another, coming back in at night, and he was just getting crooked. And so finally he came up to the king and said, now look at here, king. I just have about had enough of this. I've been working for you every gall darn day, and you never do feed me. You make me work hard. You never pay me. What in the world is going on here? He says, Jack, are you mad? He says, you gall darn right I'm mad. So he threw Jack down on the ground, took out his Case XX pocket knife that he bought down at the hardware store, down at Lincoln Loan, and cut off his three strips of skin right out of his back. And boy, I tell you, friends, that made Jack just twice as mad. He jumped out there, didn't ask for his pay or nothing, didn't even pick up his sneakers from in the barn and took off. Well, now, back in over in Randolph County here, you see, Little Jack had sort of wondered what was happening to his big brother. He hadn't got a postcard, no telegram, no long-distance telephone calls on Sunday nights when the rates are cheaper, nothing at all from his big brother, and he didn't know what in the world was happening to him. So he decided he'd go off and take him a little trip over there. Well, he was walking up on the mountain when he saw this big, looked like a steam locomotive coming up the other side of the hill. There was steam and blood spitting and curses flying and everything he could think of. And it came up and wasn't in his big brother Jack, just running up the hill back home as fast as he could. And he says, Jack, what in the world happened to you? He says, don't you go fooling with that king. He'll crook your party and he'll
run a little contract on you and ruin your program over there. Just don't fool around with him. He didn't explain anything about what had happened. Just took off. So Jack sat down on the rock and he says, now, I better go over to Pocahontas County there, Greenbrier County, whichever it's, I said it was, and I better find out what's going on with his story here. So he went down there and he... It must be the altitude or something. So he went down there and he knocked on the microphone. The king came to the door. And he told him, he says, King, I know all about your little program down here about cutting three strips of skin out of the back, about working and not paying and everything, but I tell you, I'm hard up. I just got to have some work, and I'll work for you. So he says, okay, you go to bed, and tomorrow morning I'll have you tend my sheep. Well, he got up the next morning. He says, King, how about some breakfast? King told him the same thing. You do some work for me before I pay you. So the king counted up the sheep. Jack went out to the sheep pasture. Well, Jack was sitting up there, and about 11:30, quarter to 12, you know, between quarter to 12 and 12:30, when you have to eat here in Randolph County. His stomach just started to growl and making the awfulest rattling noises, and he said he was hungry. So he just took out his case pocket double X knife, went over, cut a head off one of those sheep, built them up a big fire, and ate the thing. Well, he brought the sheep back, and the king was sitting on the fence post just counting up all the sheep. He says, King, Jack, one of my sheep is missing. Jack says, I know. He says, what happened to it? He says, well, what usually happens to sheep when they get missing? He says, well, did it burn up in a forest fire? He says, well, sort of did, but not exactly. He says, well, did it fall in a big pit? Yeah, it sort of did, but not exactly what you're thinking about. He says, well, Jack, did a wolf eat it? He says, yes, a wolf did eat it, but it's not exactly the kind of wolf you're talking about. He says, well, Jack, stop beating around the bush. Tell me what happened to my sheep. He says, I ate it. He says, you what? You what? You ate my sheep, you gold-darn crazy thing. What in the world is wrong with you? He says, King, are you mad? He says, no. He says, you can't make me mad, Jack. You can't make me mad. I bet you all are wondering where that came from. You can't make me mad. He says, but I can't have you go killing my sheep off of me. I swear what I'm going to have to do to you is I'm going to have to put you to work doing something else this afternoon. Well, so he said, this afternoon, Jack, here's what I want you to do. He took him out in the field. Says, Jack, can you plow new ground? And Jack says, God, can I plow new ground? Hand me that plow. And he had two big Clydesdale Budweiser horses standing right there. And right behind those two horses was a big, shiny, chrome, Sears and Roebuck brand new plow. Come on, we got to take a break pretty soon. And he plowed up the new ground. One way up and one way back, and friends, that was the straightest furrow that the king had ever seen plowed anywhere. And he says, God, Jack, I believe I can leave you here and you won't tear up anything, so I'm going to go back to the house and I just want this whole thing plowed this afternoon. Well, you know how it is. He plowed four or five rows and he got tired. It was hot. Sat down on a rock, started to smoke his pipe. When all of a sudden down the road he heard coming, rickety rick, bobbity boom. Rickety rick, bubbity bum. And he looked down the road, and coming down the road was the oldest, grubbiest looking beggar man you ever saw in your whole life. Looked a lot like you, sitting on the back of an old, worst old flea-bitten nag you ever saw in your whole life. And it was such a strange looking horse that whenever it would walk, its knees would knock together, rickety rick, and it'd fall right down, bubbity bum, and it'd pick itself up and go, all down the road it was going, rickety rick, bumpity bump, rickety rick, bumpity bump. Well, Jack came running up to that beggar man. He says, where in the world did you get that good-looking horse? He says, what are you talking about? You fancy people work for the king, may all sorts of money, can afford all that stuff. Don't go throwing us off on us poor people because we haven't got money to buy big fancy Budweiser horses like you got over there. He says, no, I'm serious. I am the curator of the king's Antique Horse Museum. And we need an antique horse just like that, Bryan Museum. And I'm willing to trade you these two big, fat, lazy, ugly horses here for that old horse you got right there. Now, is it a deal? He says, you must be nuts. Jack says, yes. Will you trade? And he says, yes. So he unhitched those two big, fat horses, and the beggar man took them off down the road as fast as he could, before he could even change his mind. Well, Jack hitched up that old nag, and that thing, friends, that thing was just the sorriest thing you ever saw in your life. It was plowing in circles and knocking kids off bicycles and running into parking meters and everything, you saw. And the king came out about 3 o'clock or so to check him out, see how the new ground was being plowed, and he saw this old thing and his plow all dented up from hitting big rocks, and he came running out, and he says, Jack, where did you get that ugly old horse? He says, King, I saw this horse coming down here, and I figured you needed an antique horse, so I traded those big old fat ugly horses for this nice good-looking one. Now, what do you think? You what? You crazy thing, I ought to tan your hide, I ought to wear you out, you old thing. I says, King, are you mad? The king says, you can't make me mad. But I can't have you trading off my horses. I'm going to give you something else to do. And he grabbed Jack by the ear and he says, you follow me. He took him right down the apple orchard. He says, now, Jack, I'm going to give you something you can't tear up at all. I'm going to have you pick apples. He says, you reckon you can pick apples? Jack says, God. I've picked more apples, King, than you've ever seen. He says, well, okay, you go down the tool shed down there, you pick up everything you need, and you come back up and you start picking apples, and I might even feed you tonight, but I doubt it. So Jack went down to the tool shed and got him a big 20-pound pick sack and a little step ladder and a big double-bitted axe. Went back up to the hill there. Friends, he got up there. He started chopping down apple trees left and right. And he must have had 15 or 20 of them down when the king came running up. He says, Jack, what in the world are you doing? He says, I'm picking apples. What does it look like I'm doing, King? He says, it looks like you're chopping down my gall darn trees. That's what it looks like you're doing. He says, now, King, don't you care about me? I mean, I'm your best farmhand. The king says, God. He says, King, doesn't it make a lot more sense for me to bring the apples down here where I am than to risk breaking my neck going up there and you losing your best farm hand? King says, Jack, I'm going to show you how to pick apples. He put the ladder up against the side of one of the few trees that was left, and he says, now, Jack, you hold that ladder. And Jack says, yeah, I'll hold the ladder. He climbed up there and he says, see, Jack, what you do is you reach your arm right over the microphone stand here, so in case you fall, you're still hanging up there. He says, you mean in case the ladder falls out from me like this? And he goes, hanging up there. He says, Jack, you put that ladder back there right now. He says, King, are you mad? He says, no, but I might get awful perturbed if you don't put that ladder back down there right now. You can't make me mad. He says, King, I'll tell you what. You tell your wife to fix me the biggest meal she's ever, the biggest meal she's ever fixed for anybody. And after I'm done and picked my teeth and smoked a cigar, worked a crossword puzzle, and watched Happy Times, I might come back up here and just think about putting that ladder back. So Jack, you go down and tell him to do that right now. So he ran down the hill, got down there, knocked on the door this time, opened up the door, and there was a Quain. Says, Quain? Says, yes, Jack? Says, King says you're supposed to give me a big old kiss right now. He says, what? He says, you're supposed to give me a big, a bingin' right now. Well, she took a broom to him, and she beat him halfway back up the hill. He came running back up to the king, and he says, King, she says she won't do it. He says, Jack, you go down there, too. You tell her to fix you the biggest meal you ever had in your life, or I'm going to cut her head off in the morning. He says, what if she don't believe me? You tell her to yell up here, and I'll tell her that I will. So Jack went running up and down the hill again. Oh, Queen! Took her right out in the front yard where she could see the king hanging up in the tree. There's his Quain. K-Y-A-N, Quain. See the king up yonder?
Yeah.
He says, you're supposed to give me the biggest kiss you've ever given anyone in your whole life and not to fool around about it, or he's going to cut your head off in the morning and you won't never have to do it again. She says, well, I don't believe you, Jack. Well, you just ask him.
Honey, is that true?
Yes. You go ahead and do it.
That awful thing?
Give it everything you got, the best you ever did, dear. Well, The queen, she held her nose and puckered up her lips. And Jack, friends, he grabbed her. And he came up for air 5 minutes later. And the king was standing there. He jumped out of the trees, broke both his legs, and hobbled down there on his kneecaps with a big shotgun. And he was putting that shotgun right up to Jack. Says, Jack, what in the heck are you doing? He says, I'm kissing your wife. What does it look like I'm doing? Says, that's exactly what it looks like you're doing. He says, King, are you mad? He says, you go darn right I'm mad. Ain't nobody in the world kisses my wife except me, because she's a queen and I'm a king. And see, we're married and nobody does that except me. Well, he just heard that he was mad and threw that king right down the ground, took out his pocket knife, cut three licks of skin right out of his back, and ran off. Didn't even worry about getting paid, as fast as he could. He got home that night just after supper time. Big Jack was still lying in bed, those big old sores just a running in his back. Well, he took those strips of king's skin out, and wouldn't you know, they fit right into Jack's back exactly. And they tell me that to this day, that family has royal blood running through their veins, and I believe it's true. Well, friends, I'm going to do one more, and then we can get up and take a break and stretch and visit. And I was telling you about this long-awaited mythological Hammer Dulcimer record that's coming out next week that features, besides Paul Reisler, Tweena Lydon-Jones and Wayne Crisco Kid Erbsen and several other people of infamous fame. But in the meantime, I've got some of my How Can I Keep From Burning Out records out there. And my wife and five kids would sure appreciate it if you'd buy a record, take it home with you. So I'm going to play a ragtime piece that Maybelle Carter originally recorded on the guitar. Carter family's from the county I live in, Scott County, Virginia, called the Victory Rag. Thank you very much. Let's take a break for about 15 and come on back. Thank you.
Don't encourage them. For, folks, if that was any better, it'd be bluegrass.